Welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a place where we talk about all different types of creative arts therapies, expressive therapies, and creative approaches to therapy. My name is Kate Shannon. I am a licensed clinical professional counselor as well as a board-certified music therapist, and I'm your host. Today's topic is probably one of my favorite topics to talk about. I absolutely love storytelling in all the different ways that it can be utilized in sessions, and have just been like a sponge in trying to soak up how much we can use storytelling as an active intervention, as a passive intervention, how it can promote healing. And this episode really touches on a bunch of that stuff. Ella Riley, in part one of this episode, she comes on and she's talking with us today about the power of non-directive work and storytelling within an expressive art and play therapy environment. She shares with us a little bit about non-directive play in her work and how storytelling is an integral part of that work and how symbols can be utilized through these experiences. She shares a bunch of different resources, which we're going to get into at the end of the episode today. So this episode is split into two parts, part one and part two, and I've also split the resources into part one and part two. So at the end of today's episode, I'm going to dive in a little bit to the resources that Ella shares, as well as some additional resources that I have that are for therapists. So more like instructional books or books for us to read as therapists and how we can utilize storytelling. And then in part two, we're going to dive into actual books in bringing in kids, children's, young teens books that we can bring into the session and utilize. So part one will be kind of the therapy books, and then part two will include more of the children's books that we can bring into our sessions. So Ella Riley, she is a fully trained art psychotherapist. Her qualifications include an MA in art therapy from Crawford College of Art and Design. She has a PGD in principles of art therapy and art and design as well, a BA in design from NCAD, and diplomas in teletherapy and play therapy for adults and children. She's a fully accredited member of IACAT, which is the Irish Association of Creative Arts Therapies. She's worked with children, adolescents, young adults, and families, and she has tons of different experiences working with children in a variety of settings with a variety of needs as well. She has so much love for what she does, and I think that's something I just absolutely adore in this episode is Ella's passion for what she does. You can feel it, and that always gets me really excited, and it's talking all about storytelling and non-directive play and art, and there's just so many gems in this episode of how what we do is so important. And one of my favorite things that she talks about is being a witness, the power of just being a witness for a child, for what is happening in a session. So we are going to dive into this episode. Again, don't forget to check out the show notes, because part one's episode is going to outline some different resources for therapists if you're looking to learn more about storytelling, whether it's bringing in books or whether it's creating stories within your sessions. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Also, hint, hint, there is a storytelling resource that's going out in our newsletter in a few weeks. That'll be going out next week or the week after. It's a freebie, another storytelling freebie. And there are a bunch of storytelling prompts. And I actually made, the freebie includes a couple pages, but you can actually purchase the additional full resource that has over 100 different prompts that you can use for storytelling. That includes symbols, it includes pictures, and it includes words. So a variety of way to start telling stories when you need some kind of prompt. So don't forget to join the newsletter as well. But without further ado, let's head into this episode and enjoy. Okay, Ella, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm coming all the way from Ireland here today.
I love it. So excited. So exciting to be, meeting you and just hearing about everything that you do from being so far away. It's so lovely that we can connect. And I think that's what I love about Zoom and being able to do this stuff all online.
I know, it's made it so easy for us to connect as well, which is brilliant.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. We need community now more than ever. And that means community everywhere with everyone. So I love it.
Agreed. Agreed. And the more brains we could pick about creative therapy, the better.
Yes. Yes. Loud. Yes. I hear that so much. I feel that. Well, for our listeners, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself as a person and yourself as a therapist?
Yeah, of course. So my name is Ella, obviously. I'm here in Dublin in Ireland and I work private practice. So I'm on my own here in my space in a little village called Sandymount. Not that little, actually. I originally went to art college a long, long time ago and got my degree in craft in ceramics and decided that actually I wasn't really that interested in the old finished piece. I didn't really care about the aesthetics of what I was creating. I more so just enjoyed the making and the doing and how it made me feel. And ended up volunteering in a hospital here in Talos, working with children doing art while they were waiting to go in for their consultations. And I could just see the difference it made in that it's sometimes only in a couple of minutes. Sometimes they'd be there for 3 hours with me. And I got talking to an art therapist there. And I just thought, oh, no, that's for me. That's what I need to be doing. So went off and studied that. I admittedly, shockingly, never thought I would work with kids. Even when I started the master's, I was very much like, no, I'm going to work with adults or like, you know, young adults, you know, people in their 20s. I can't work with kids. And then I ended up doing my placements in schools. And I mean, you could say it was uphill from there. I loved every bit of it. It was brilliant. So that's what I've been doing. I've been, you know, working privately as an art therapist / play therapist ever since.
Wow. I love that story so much. And I resonate so much with, I mean, we were saying before we're cut from the same cloth, but the thinking, I remember going and thinking I'm only working with kids. I don't think I want to work with adults or teens. No way.
Yeah.
And now I work with teens, adults, and kids. And I'm like, I love it all. Like, I don't know. I can't, I'm just so glued, just totally into it. It's funny how that changes.
Wild.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's just kind of chosen for you, you know, like it was pre-chosen. And then I kind of realized it. I was like, oh, okay, actually I'm far better with children than I am with adults. So let's use this to our advantage.
Let's just fall into it, like not resist and go into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Go with the process.
Yes. Yes. I love it. So fun. I think sometimes I'm like, oh, what if I missed that? Or what if I pushed back against that? And I think that part of, you know, knowing that you have to trust the process is part of that of like, nope, this is here for a reason. I'm feeling it for a reason.
Yeah. And I mean, that comes with experience of life as well. When you kind of realize, actually, the less I push against this, the easier this is going to be for me.
Yes. I'm going to swim with the current on this one.
Exactly. Rather than against. Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. Well, so you do a bunch of different kind of creative arts therapies in your work, especially in private practice. What is your approach usually to creative arts therapy, to your kind of creative approaches? Do you use directive, non-directive, a mix of both? Does it depend on the client? What's kind of your approach to your therapeutic process?
Yeah, I mean, overall, it's pretty non-directive work. But it really does depend on the client and the situation and what's coming up, you know, with things like using storytelling in a therapeutic space. I mean, I would consider that kind of directive work because you are using the book for that child for the particular difficulties they're experiencing. And you're choosing that particular book to help reflect that back to them. So that would be probably the most directive work I would do. Otherwise very much non-directive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What draws you to that? Or was there a process in finding that too, of when you were learning about different approaches where you were just kind of really resonated with the non-directive work, or what draws you to that approach?
So, I mean, when we were studying, there was so many different approaches you could have taken. And, you know, there was these very directive where you had a plan for each session, you had to do this, and I found with children, especially some of them being as young as 4, that having a plan going into a session just doesn't work for most children. It just doesn't. You know, if you have a four-year-old in a space for 45 minutes and you have a, you know, you have something in mind that you want to do with them, inevitably that's going to get thrown out the window. Because, you know, the main thing that is so, so important in the space that I work in is that the child is in charge. You know, this is their space. I'm holding them and I'm keeping them safe and I'm keeping those tight boundaries, but it's very much for them. And so it's more important that they direct where we're going than I direct them. Because if I'm directing them where I want them to go, then that beautiful unconscious work isn't going to come up. And that's the really good gooey stuff that you need to get into.
Yes, yes. And goes so much along with that trusting the process of if, which I think is hard as a clinician too. I do a lot of non-directive work. And I think part of that struggle is my resistance to like, nope, I'm just going to trust the process. Yep, everything's falling on the floor, but that's okay. I'm going to trust the process.
It's like that daily, hourly struggle of going, there's paint in my hair, there's paint on the ceiling. I really want to clean it up. I really want to, but who is that for? Is that for me or is that for them? Because inevitably, most of the time, it's not for them at all. I mean, if they want it cleaned up, they're going to clean it up themselves, right?
Yes.
So it's not important for me to go, you know, getting the paint off their face and cleaning their hands. And that will just stop the whole therapeutic process, you know, but it is so tricky not to just jump in at moments that I'm often find I'm fighting that like want to ask those questions. You know, we're trying to make a child comfortable and you're like, so what's your favorite ice cream? And what did you do yesterday? And what do you have a favorite color? Do you have a dog? You have three dogs. What are their names? You know, I mean, you could be doing that for 45 minutes. But again, if you're being really verbal with the child, you know, you're bringing them to a very conscious, we're going into the play. You want them to not necessarily have to speak, to just be able to in that moment and not answer the questions about their dog's names.
Yes. Yeah. To like drop into that space. And if we're constantly filling it, there's no time to go in there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
To just try to be, you know, a witness as well, you know, and really be there for them for whatever needs they have, but not fulfilling our own needs while we're doing that.
Yes, that's such a beautiful way to put that. I love hearing that as a witness, like being a framing it as a witness, which I think for me, I love to have like almost sayings or different things like prompts for myself of like reground or drop in and be a witness. I feel like would be a great one for those moments when like, oh, I want to, you know, get the sand out of my shoes, but like, nope, I'm just being a witness right now. I don't have to do that.
Yeah. And I find it so fascinating as well that often in sessions I'll have children, especially when they first started working with me, and they'll say, look at this. Or did you see what I did? And you're going, yeah, no, I'm watching everything. And you have to, I mean, it's then your role to say, well, yeah, I did see that. I saw that. You showed me, you know? And I feel often when children are doing that, it's like, well, they obviously need to be seen a little bit more. There's not enough of someone witnessing what's happening in their life, you know?
Absolutely.
So kind of brings that all back. You're like, okay, I'm here for this child. This isn't for me.
Yes. And the power that witnessing brings, like just that power of being and witnessing and not necessarily doing something, but just being there to witness, that really brings so much healing and so much to the child and just that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you really have to think about that kind of therapeutic triangular relationship. You know, you've got the sand, or you've got the art, you've got the child, and you've got the therapist. And it's important to keep those things in place. But if you're coming in and having your own agenda, it's going to be hard for that triangular relationship to really work, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think too, something I feel like I've noticed with that of seeing in session or that trust, you know, when we are trusting the process and we trust that the child will bring in or go where they need to go, they feel that, you know, we don't say like, I trust you, you know, but like that is such a felt sense in the room of if they know we trust them to go there and that we're like in that welcoming environment.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And I found as well that sometimes, and very much at the start of that kind of relationship, you'll find that like some of the kids, kind of slightly older ones, are going, I don't know what to do, and I'm bored. But actually, the more they understand your role in that whole session, and really that you're there to keep them safe and to hold whatever comes into that, then they're able to kind of loosen up and get more involved and feel a little less, you know, oh, what am I doing? Am I doing it wrong? Am I doing it right? But actually be in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to really feel the non-judgment, to feel that unconditional positive regard that's happening.
Yeah, totally, totally. You know, and just the knowing that you're only ever really going to step in when it's unsafe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is so rare. You know, it's so rare that you have to kind of put up a hand and go, oh, hang on. You know, we might get hurt in this situation because they know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's such a unique space. Like, I think that some of that, I don't like to say resistance, but maybe protection of, like, I think of teens of, I don't know what to do. Is this going to be judged and whatnot, is because, like, what other place is like therapy where it's like, no, there's no judgment here. Like, you're in school all day where you're constantly being judged. And this is the opposite of that.
And I just love, like, I don't, but many teens, I only take on a few. Mm-hmm. But I just love the fact that they don't feel like all of the focus is on them. And that feels more comfortable. They still have your gaze, but it's a comfortable gaze. You know, it's not scrutiny. It's not judgment. It's not that's right or that's wrong. It's, you know, we're both focusing on what's being created as much as we are on the person creating it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I love that perspective. That's so well said, of how it's like a softer gaze almost in that way.
Right. I mean, because that can be intimidating. Mm-hmm. You know, I've even experienced having talk therapy, which, you know, I did like when I found the right therapist, but it's intense, you know, sitting opposite someone and they're taking in your every move is really intimidating. And that's really tricky. And then that's really blocking.
Yeah. You know,
then it's so easy to shut down in that situation.
I could imagine an extroverted person, like the most extroverted person, could feel really on the spot and nervous, let alone for our introverted, shy, anxious, you know, how much more that pressure must feel if you're just sitting across the couch.
Yes, totally. Like, it's a lot. It is a lot. For an adult, let alone a child.
Yes, yes, for sure. I mean, there's so many adults who will come into therapy because it's too much.
Yeah.
And so many kids, you know, don't always come on their own volition, and it's hard.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, with that non-directive work, often I think in my work doing a lot of non-directive work too, I feel like there's so often non-directive work kind of leads into stories or telling stories or making elaborate tales. Yeah. Does this happen? Do you find that this happens for you? And what does it look like in the work that you do?
It does. And I mean, I think that's why I love non-directive work so much, because inevitably the child leads you, you know, where they want to go or where they need to go. Mm-hmm. And storytelling is just such a deep, like, it's really deeply rooted in us. I mean, if you look back at, you know, cave drawings, we're telling a story, right? Or Irish folklore, you know, it's our tradition to tell stories and sit around a fire and, you know, replay stories that we've been told a million times before. I mean, it's in our blood, you know, it's a very natural thing for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like mythology, you know, so, all of that stuff.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I find that, you know, just like adults do, children very much gravitate towards them. And I think my first experience with storytelling was in the sand tray first. And it was very much that, you know, a child would set up their sand tray and they would say, okay, I'm going to tell you a story. You're going to write this down. So I'm there with my lovely slow writing, trying to write as quickly as possible and make sure that I was getting in every single little and every part of the story they wanted, even the ones with absolutely no full stops. And it was just amazing. I found that sometimes, and not with every child and not in every session, that I would read the story back to them if they chose that. And the expression on some of their faces was just fascinating. I mean, depending on what the story was, I'd find, you know, if it was a scary story, that often children would be kind of laughing and giggling to themselves, like, oh, that's so funny, like that person got killed and they got stabbed and oh, it was hilarious. Or, you know, they'd be telling a very true story about them and their siblings, and they get very serious and say, yeah, well, that's what my brother's like, you know. And I just found that so interesting, that without having to verbally explain their struggle or their difficulty, that they could use a lot of the time metaphor to get their point across to me. You know, it's so powerful.
It is. And that, you know, that how it naturally kind of occurs. And then, like you were just saying too, the word that comes to mind is like gold mine, because, you know, hearing a kiddo and you repeat back that story and they become really serious or they become giggly, or you get all of this additional information and this gold mine, yeah, of like a glimpse into what's really going on, into that really deep part of them.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I mean, I often find, especially with the sand tribe, that when they're telling you a story, they're not thinking about the start, middle and end. They're not planning ahead. They don't know in their head what's going to happen. It's just coming out. And I mean, some of the craziest stuff comes out, but that's, again, that really gooey, that's that really good stuff that you want, that maybe isn't necessarily good, but is so necessary for that therapeutic process.
Yes. It's so funny that you say that, because it's not something I know, I don't consciously think about that, but it is like you're in flow state. It's like watching, being a witness to someone in flow, where they're just going and they're not thinking about the end, but they're just going from the next part to the next part to the next part, and they're in it and gooey. I love that word, in that it's like there's just, it's so rich in there of all the everything that happens in there.
Yeah. And everything that happens in it and everything they're expressing is for a reason, just like, you know, every behavior, there's a reason behind it. So you know that everything they're telling you is something that they've experienced in some way. It's all parts of them, you know?
Yeah. And that's actually was going to be a follow-up question I was thinking of, because I think with for listeners who might not know or aren't as familiar with storytelling or even with sand tray and what you can do in the sand tray, how do you take something so abstract or metaphorical, and how do you kind of take that information and use it as data or as information to inform what's going on? What do you kind of do with that information once you have it?
I mean, you have to obviously be very clued in. Like I always say to parents, and I remember like when I first met with my current supervisor, she said this to me years ago, was that our job looks deceivingly simple. You know, it looks so easy. We get them in a room for whatever amount of time, we play with them and they leave happy, you know, and that sounds lovely. That sounds like the dream, but that's not the reality. You know, my clients are constantly moving. Everything's whirling in my head. I'm trying to connect things throughout the session, as well as try to be in the session and there and not distracted. I do, like, before I start with any clients, I always meet with parents and I try to get them as much of a history on the child as possible. But I do find even often sometimes some, you know, not always major, sometimes minor trauma might come up in our sessions, and I will bring it to parents and say, oh, you know, was there a time that they possibly fell on their head and had to go to hospital? And they said, oh yeah, but they were fine. Which, you know, they were fine, but it stayed in their body and it's come out in the session. So, you know, it's partly me going back and looking at notes and connecting other sessions and, you know, finding the thread between them. And then other times it's kind of me going, okay, I get a sense that something happened here, but, you know, maybe I haven't heard about it yet because it's maybe not that big a deal, or maybe mom and dad didn't think it was important, or, you know, whatever it was. So you're always kind of looking for the symbols in the work, you know? Yes. And I mean, I love my symbols book. I mean, I have several different, because I mean, symbols are really tricky, because they're different for everyone. You know, what I might associate with a bird, someone else might associate the complete opposite. So it is hard work, and sometimes it's kind of guessing work. Yeah. But I think the more you know the client, the easier it is to understand what they're trying to say.
Yes. And that how you framed that is so helpful, I think, to, especially if you haven't worked with symbolic or metaphors or, you know, symbolic things in therapy too, because it can look so much from the outside of just, oh, well, this is just a story about a dragon and a fairy and a box and these couple of things.
Yeah.
But if you know the client and then you know their stories, you know, just from that, like that, you know, very in-depth assessment, and then you can kind of see what some of those symbols might happen to be standing for. And then you can, like you said, I love that, like, thread, you know, kind of threading it all together of like, this is what's coming out and where this is kind of connecting.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, even I think like most psychotherapists would know of kind of different attachment theories, for example, and you would generally know that pretty early on in your work, what kind of, you know, attachment that child had. And that might then help that thread be connected in certain ways. You know, if you're seeing them react to things in a particular way in sessions, or, you know, if their stories are in a particular way, you can kind of go, well, that's that kind of attachment. That's that child's attachment kind of showing its face there, you know, like that's the reality in their mind.
Yes. It like sheds itself in that way when it comes through in stories.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Well, I'm going to make sure to ask you about those symbols books too, once we go into like resources at the end, because I love my symbols books too. They're so, so addicting.
I know. I love it. And I'm one of those crazy people who the odd time, maybe like once every couple of months, will have a very vivid dream and will go to my symbols
book. Yes.
And kind of pick it apart a little bit myself.
Yes. I literally just had it happen like 2 nights ago, and it's not that often. It is like once in a great while. And I was like, ooh, this one just felt bigger. Like it meant something. And it was actually like an alligator, and it was a client, and which I felt it's actually something that I'm going to bring into my supervision too. Cause I feel like sometimes those big ones are like, something's going on, I'm processing that, or it's in the back of my mind. And
yeah.
And I do the same thing. I'm like, okay, let me just see and dabble and see if there's anything that connects there with what that animal or that symbol represents.
Yeah, and it can just be so useful in sessions. Like the more you understand symbols for yourself, I think the easier it can be when it comes to clients' work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's hard not to look into all of those things for yourself all the time. Because I mean, I think as therapists, we often are trying to figure out ourselves in a lot of ways constantly, you know. Mm-hmm. And that kind of feeds our work as well.
It does. Yeah. The more we learn about ourselves, it's like the more we can see, or the more we can open our eyes, I guess, to what can be happening in sessions.
Right. And have that empathy in there, you know, and kind of say, oh, do you know what? Actually, I've experienced that. So I kind of have an idea of what that little child feels like right now. You know, I was in that position. You know, it can be really helpful.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And I think I was just having a conversation last night about that, of how, you know, if we have had that experience, it's, I think it's sometimes immediate buy-in, like when somebody knows or can sense that like you are, like, you know, or that you've been there, it's like, oh, I'm safe in this, you know, and sharing this with you, you know, like it's an automatic kind of safety feeling when you have that with somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, I've even found in the past that if I ever get a child that's being diagnosed with dyslexia and they're kind of struggling with that, I'm there. I cannot wait to get stuck into sessions. I was that 8-year-old, you know, I was trying to figure it out, you know, and I did. So let me help you figure it out.
Yes, 100%. And then it's like you can... that judgment, I think, is just gone. You know, there's like no room for that judgment, and like the empathy is so big in that of it's even bigger because you've gone through it. So, you know, and you know, you're like, I know all of those feelings that go there and I've literally been there.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I love that. To go back to our with, and I think we kind of did touch on this too, but that therapeutic piece of storytelling of getting the story out and, you know, what, you know, even I think there's that catharsis, of course, of just like kind of getting a story out, but how does that kind of become therapeutic? Where, you know, where does it go from just kind of telling a story to becoming therapeutic?
Well, I think that, I mean, generally when I'm doing storytelling, it will be around the sound tray and it, you know, it gives the child insight into what's going on for them. I mean, when they hear that story back, you know, you're relaying back to them exactly what they said, but they're able to hear it for the first time. You know, it's very different, something swirling around in your head and in your body, but then someone on the outside in a very safe manner coming in and repeating that back to you and actually telling you that story is extremely different to, you know, it swirling around. So it can be really helpful in the way that, you know, often when there's a story, there is going to be metaphor. You know, there's usually a beginning and then there's usually some sort of resolve in the stories. And it's just interesting to see how a child can communicate that back to themselves. Like, you know, they might be expressing that, oh, actually, you have resilience. You are resilient. You can get through this. You know, it's difficult, but you can do it. And you know, that's very much why I would use storybooks in sessions. You know, I would very much choose a book that would match the client's difficulties or their struggles as much as possible without being too upfront. You know, I think that it is important to stay in the metaphor. You know, I don't need, if a child's wetting the bed, I don't need a book that says Johnny wets the bed. Like that's too much. But if it's, you know, a mouse that keeps getting wet when he gets into his bed because there's a hole in his ceiling, then we can use that metaphor. That, you know, that is a safer way for a child to understand that actually, you know, they have that resilience. You know, they're not alone in this. And it's a really lovely indirect response to their issues.
Yeah, it promotes that safety. Like you can even just feel that safety when it's just a little bit farther away and not as direct. It feels so much more safe.
Yeah. Well, and you're still, I mean, it's giving them insight. And I often go for books that have, I mean, for the younger ones, for kind of 8 and under, that have animals rather than humans. And often you'll find that they're kind of doing human-like things, but it's a little bit more comfortable for a child, especially to hear those struggles and then, you know, what comes out of that and the possibilities through something a little bit more whimsical and a little bit more fun. And it's not us pointing out, you know, what that child is finding difficult, because never in a session would I say, oh, you know, I heard you're having trouble wetting. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's almost like the elephant in the room. It's there. We're all aware of it, you know, and a child very much knows why they're coming to sessions, even if they're not fully aware. On some level, they know why they're coming. So by pointing it out and being really obvious, I personally, if I was in that position, would find that off-putting. You know, I would be a little freaked out. I'd be like, oh, what? No, this is too much. I don't like this. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to talk to you about it. And you probably experience that with even older clients. Like, if you are being quite direct with them in some situations, not all, sometimes it is useful, but in some situations it's like, oh no, we're not going there. That's not what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're bringing in a character in a story, you're just reading a storybook to them, right? Mm-hmm. But you're using those metaphors in a much easier way to digest.
And then like that insight, it's like almost the, I imagine the way that you're describing it is when you're bringing that in and trusting that process and gently having something that has that like safe aesthetic distance,
yes,
like the client is really learning it for themselves versus yes. like saying something very directive of like, I hear you're having trouble with XYZ versus just kind of going through these things that are close enough. Or they know, like you said, they know, you know, why they're there. And then they get to find these gemstones of what they need to help them move through whatever they're right. moving through.
Yeah. And I mean, there are so many amazing books out there and really clued in authors. You know, they're really creating books that, you know, show a psychological process of characters through adventures and, you know, and meeting people and doing different things and struggles, and then the tools to adapt or to get through or to resolve those issues. I mean, these books are created for a reason, you know.
Yes.
So it's important for us to use that to our advantage.
Yes. Yeah. And they're captivating. I mean, I think of some of the books, the artwork in some of the books too, are just absolutely stunning. And so it's so captivating. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, especially as a creative therapist, we're, you know, we're surrounded by imagery. So why not, again, use that to our advantage? You know, I often, and I had this little girl only in session a couple of weeks ago, and we read a book at the end of every single session. We've just gotten into that, and you know, at the beginning I was choosing books and I was suggesting them, but I often found that I would be reading a book to her and she wouldn't even be looking at the book. She'd just be staring up at me with this total look of awe and shock, just wide-eyed, like Bambi, just completely enthralled. And we could have read this book 7 times before, you know, she knows what happens. This isn't a surprise, but it's just that, oh, you know, it's all clicking into place. You could see what was happening inside, which is just amazing. It's amazing.
Yes. I mean, that brings tears to my eyes just imagining it. I can't imagine what that felt like for both of you and together at the same time in that to like, she is putting all this together and you're seeing her put all of this together in that moment. And like, wow, what a sweet, sweet moment.
Yeah. And you know, it's such a great tool as well, because, you know, I would work quite closely with families and parents and suggest things and, you know, do a lot of work, but it's great to be able to suggest a book or send them home with the book and give them, you know, guidelines of, you know, if they want to read this book, but do not under any circumstances, you know, discuss the metaphor unless the child brings it up. You do not need to on any level explain what is happening in this book, because they know, they know straight away, and they will get what they need from it.
They're aware. There's so much, there's so much, not enough credit given to children being aware of what's wrong or what's going on. Like, it's always like, oh, we should lay it out very clearly and put it out. And it's like, no, we really don't have to.
Yeah.
All right. This is where we are going to pause on this episode, and part two will be out next week. Again, part two is going to dive into more storytelling, some different books. Ella tells these beautiful stories of just how healing books have been in her sessions, with some kind of client experiences that we get to hear about that are absolutely wonderful. But on the tail end of this episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about the resources that Ella shares and a few that I have as well, so that if you're interested in learning more about bringing storytelling into your practice, that you have a place to go. So Ella shares with us this book is already in my Amazon cart and I can't wait to get it. It's called The Dictionary of Symbols, and this is the first link in the show notes. And this book looks so awesome. Ella showed it to me while we were talking too. And it is like, by a dictionary of symbols, it is like dictionary size. It's a giant book and just has tons of information about symbols. And Ella was saying that it really goes into a lot of different detail too about some cultural relevance of symbols, as well as interpretations in different ways of, you know, maybe dream interpretations and other interpretations, which is really nice to have a variety of interpretations so you can see how flexible and how much symbols are very much specific to each and every child and their experience and their life experience. So this book sounds amazing. It's ginormous. I feel like if you are someone who uses storytelling, symbolic play and whatnot, I think always having a book that has some helpful symbols in it is great, of what they can mean and where they can guide us, of course, with symbols. We know that it's not always the exact thing, but sometimes they can guide our work and they can be helpful information. Ella also shares a book called Sand Play, a source book for play therapists. And again, this looks like a standard book for any therapist who's looking to utilize sand tray or sand play within their work. Again, sand play and sand tray, there's a lot of different trainings and some specific trainings to do that specific work if you are doing that within your practice. But these books are a great way to get started to understand what sand play and sand tray are and how they work. How powerful it can be to not only just be in the sand, but to be creating worlds and creating stories within the sand. One of my favorite resources that goes along with this as well, that's linked in the show notes, is called Images of Resiliency. And this is a book all about sand play as well. And it's titled Troubled Children Create Healing Stories in the Language of Sand Play. And what I found really powerful in this too is this book actually has images of the sand trays that these children have made as they're processing through their work. So you get to see the progression of what a sand tray looked like at the beginning of therapy and what it looks like at the end. And the author just beautifully ties the progress of therapy through these images. And you can really see how children are creating these stories and how it aligns with their life. And how they're processing, problem solving, healing, moving through all of the obstacles that come up within the sand. So it's a beautiful, I feel like it's a book where I ended up probably crying at least once or twice because it's just a beautiful, beautiful book. One of my favorite books about play therapy in general, but that one is linked in the show notes too. Ella shares another book with us called Using Storytelling as a Therapeutic Tool with Children. And this looks like a fantastic book. I have not read this book, but it looks amazing too in bridging different ways that we can utilize storytelling within any type of session. So the therapeutic value of storytelling, really, how we can use this tool as an effective response when a child tells a story to us, or if we're telling a story to them, helping children with feelings in general, of why storytelling is such a good way to help children navigate their feelings and problem solve their feelings. And then also on the therapist, and this will probably give you all these resources in that you may need in a storytelling session or when you're utilizing that storytelling tool within your session. So looks fantastic. This is another one that's in my Amazon cart and I can't wait to get it and read it. There is another book in the show notes, and I mentioned this. I didn't mention the title in the episode, but this one is called Animal Life in Nature, Myth and Dreams. And this is a book that I've had on my shelf for a while and I find really valuable when we are doing symbolic play or we're telling stories within sessions that are specific to animals. Or if I notice that there is a animal theme or there's kind of this very big animal that takes up a lot of space in the story, if it's the main character or if it kind of keeps coming up, then I lean on this book a lot for that. And what I love about this book is it not only tells you like the different behaviors and personality of all of these different animals within nature, but it also tells so many different stories, myths, folklores, and kind of like the cultural significance of these animals in many, many different cultures, as well as a whole separate part at the end of each description of what this animal might mean in dreams or in a symbolism kind of way. So I find it really thorough, which is really nice. And I think similar to what Ella explained in the Dictionary of Symbols, it's a very thorough explanation of what this animal has meant in historical ways, in mythology, in folklore, in different cultures, as well as what it could mean in dreams. And so I find it really helpful information. Again, when we're with symbolism, it's subjective. So there's that, we have to tread that careful line of not just assuming this is exactly what it means, but I find that it's helpful data to kind of have in my mind if I do see that something is connected in what this animal represents and maybe what the child is moving through, what they're processing, something that they need. Sometimes I find children kind of lean on an animal and that they kind of need or want what this animal has. Sometimes the animal represents them in a way they like, in a way they don't like. And so having something that kind of gives me an idea of like, well, what does this animal represent? Especially if a child doesn't say anything, or, you know, if it's not like some pop culture reference of, oh, I'm choosing this fish because it's Nemo, then it's a great thing to have a symbol book to be able to look through and say like, all right, maybe this is kind of, you know, representing this, but let me kind of keep that in my mind palace to roll around for a little bit and see if it fits somewhere. So this book is one of my favorites to have, and I think with all of these, all five of these resources are really great resources to start on storytelling. There's of course lots of different trainings for sand play and sand tray. Those two are two different things, sand play and sand tray, and maybe we'll do an episode in the future about that. But lots of different ways to use storytelling outside of the sand tray too, even just within play, theatrical storytelling, improvising, musical storytelling. I think of even reading books, which in part two, Ella is going to talk to us a little bit more about utilizing books within therapy and how powerful that can be. So in episode two, Ella will share some beautiful stories about that as well. And we will, I'll spend a little bit of time at the end of that episode also sharing some books that she talks about, as well as a few additional books that I have too, that are really great if you're looking to bring some books into your session and utilize that storytelling in that way. Don't forget to join the newsletter for the free storytelling download that is coming out. There's a couple free pages with that one. It will be on sale and available for purchase as well if you want the full resource. That's going out in a couple weeks, and the link for our newsletter is also in the show notes. And besides that, make sure to follow Ella on Instagram. She always has lots of really awesome content, and she's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. If you have any feedback for us, you know that we have our anonymous survey in our show notes that you can always fill out at any time. You can always feel free to reach out to us at kate@creativetherapyumbrella.com. I love hearing from listeners. If you have an idea of what you want to hear more of, a topic you'd like to see, somebody you want to be on the episode, anything like that, please feel free to reach out, because I would love to hear from you. It's always lovely to hear from listeners. Otherwise, we're going to wrap up here, and thank you so much for listening and being a supporter, and be creative.